Welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us, as always, on Wednesday. Going to have an interesting show today. Again, we're following the money. Going to be talking about sequestration, what it means to you and your job, what it may mean to you and your job. Then we'll get into the trials and travails of the U.S. Postal Service, and then talk about furloughs and a variety of things. My leadoff guest here is Janet Copenhaver. She is with Federally Employed Women. Janet, thank you for trekking down from Tinleytown.
Thank you, Mike. I'm glad to be here.
You're a Washington person of sorts. You went to American University.
Yes. I've been doing public policy for about over 20 years. That's about all I'll say about
okay,
that.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. Don't want to date myself.
Yes. Good to have you. Well, actually, federally employed women, I think, at first glance, some people might not think federally employed women would be tackling the sequestration issue, even though obviously you represent people who are federal workers. You did a very interesting white paper on the subject of sequestration and whatnot a while back. And what's interesting is your emphasis, and one of them was on furloughs and hiring freezes and how they work or don't work. And the interesting thing to me, and correct me if you see it differently, I've been trying to follow this sequestration thing since day one, and since we learned what the word sequestration means, and everybody has a different definition. But I've been following it, and it seems that almost every day something changes. And they will talk about the dire consequences, and then somebody will say it's not going to be too bad. The White House comes out with a paper and a statement which says it would be destructive, was the term they used, to the government. And yet they missed a deadline for telling how destructive it would be. Congress instructed them to say how destructive it would be. And then now the Labor Department is telling contractors that they don't need to worry about sending out letters telling people they might be furloughed or fired because apparently they don't see it as that serious. So I'm quite confused about it. Have you got a clearer picture?
Well, I don't think anyone has a clear picture in Washington, D.C. But just to backtrack a little bit, we represent, yes, federally employed women, but we do tackle some federal government worker overall issues. The reason we are getting so involved in this is because women tend to get more adversely impacted by these economic scenarios. They tend not to move up the career ladder as fast, and there is a slight pay gap. So they are hit a lot, and then when you talk about pensions, cuts to pensions, they will get hit even more because they haven't put in as much because they tend to go in and out of the workforce to take care of family matters. So that's why this issue has gone to the top of our radar screen. And you mentioned, yes, that every day something changes, and that's true. And I think the administration is kind of hesitating because they don't want panic, and agency heads don't want to put all this information out there because they don't want people to panic, because they really are hoping against hope that an agreement will be reached by December 31st to avoid these 8.2% sequestration cuts.
Well, we're hearing from different groups, and I use the term pressure groups, and not in a put-down way, but these are people who represent certain interests. They may represent federal workers. They may represent contractors. They have other interests at heart. Some of them like the government. Some of them don't. Some of them depend on it. Some of them don't or think they don't. But we keep getting conflicting messages here. And earlier on, maybe 2 weeks ago, they were talking about major cuts in the Defense Department of the civilian workforce. And I think I saw 102,000 jobs was mentioned at one point. Mm-hmm. Might be at risk here, which would be about one out of six or something like that. Then more recently, we had a story on our homepage here which said, no, there won't be any layoffs. It's too complicated a process, mm-hmm. that there won't be any layoffs, but that there almost certainly would be furloughs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think, well, furlough is pretty harmless. Maybe one day a week or one day a month, something like that, 12 furlough days in a year. Government would save X amount of money. People could get by without it. It would be equivalent of a 20% pay cut, depending on how it hit them. But you say furloughs, and your white paper, furloughs are not that great the solution.
Yes, we actually did a white paper, as you mentioned, looking at several studies, specifically in California, where they had some furloughs. And they actually ended up costing more money than they saved. And you have to look at the indirect impacts. If you have, for instance, California, the DMV furloughed people, so they had to close. So the people who had to go during the workday, 9 to 5 when they're open, in the private sector were either on longer lines and had to wait longer. Therefore, they were away from their jobs. So the trickle-down impact, not only in the public sector, but in how it impacts the private sector, it has got to be taken into consideration. And that's what's being lost. I mean, they're talking about these 8.2 sequestration cuts, and economists are saying 2 million jobs could be lost in our economy, and it'll hit us by cut our gross domestic product by 2.9% or $215 billion next year. That's what's getting lost, and we've got to consider the overall impact on our economy, not alone, you know, just, well, we can save this much from cut furloughs of salaries that we don't have to pay.
Well, it looks as if both sides are, that this is really a giant game of chicken that's maybe gotten out of hand, and each side has used it from time to time to try to whipsaw the other one and get their point of view over. Do you think it's going to happen? Sequestration will hit us?
You know, I didn't think the government was going to close with Clinton either, and they did, and that was another game of chicken. This is really, really serious. They're talking Moody's is going to downgrade us again. If we hit that January 2nd day and they have to do all these cuts, I think the ramifications are going to be felt not only throughout the United States but internationally. And our economy is going to probably go back to a worse recession than we were witnessing in 2008. So we are just begging and entreating Congress and the administration to really do something. We've started a weekly one-pagers on how the services, the critical services that federal workers provide Americans everywhere and in all sectors are going to be impacted. And we're just saying, you know, you got to put politics aside. Bipartisanship needs to come together, and we have got to find an answer to this problem.
It's interesting. I think you and I had the same epiphany over the same issue. When I was at the Washington Post, every year we went through the budget crisis, and there's going to be furloughs, there's going to be shutdowns. Almost never happened, mm-hmm. And I became very cynical to the ways of the world. And when that crisis, I think it was 95, 96, mm-hmm. came along, and Newt Gingrich was a Speaker of the House, Bill Clinton was president, and this situation came on, and they, as usual, pushed the panic button at the Post, and I went around assuring everybody that this mm-hmm. was standard operating procedure, never going to happen. Well, it happened. Mm-hmm. It actually happened twice. It was rather extensive. Nobody lost a nickel. That is, no federal worker lost any pay.
Right.
They were made whole, as they would be, again, presumably, if there's something like that. But a lot of contractors lost a lot of money, and again, it just in the brief period of time it caused major problems. And you say it would be worse this time around?
Well, I think it would be, because our economy is in more dire situation than it was at that time. And who knows if federal workers are going to be made whole this time. And I just think with our unemployment already at what it's sitting on, 8.1, and to add, you know, 1.5 percentage point to our unemployment rolls already with these across-the-board cuts will be devastating.
Yeah, it's not just the direct government workers that might be involved in it, but it's the contract people. And I think several learned institutions have estimated that for every government worker, there are at least 6 to 7 contractors. So if you throw them out, the ripple effect is tremendous. And then I know during the BRAC, the base realignment and closure studies, when they were talking about bringing people into an area like Northern Virginia and moving them into places like around Fort Meade, Maryland, they were saying that for every federal job that comes here, I believe the figure was 4 to 6 other jobs are created to service them, whether mm-hmm. it's hotels, motels, restaurants, grocery stores.
Right.
So it can go both ways.
And let's move outside the Beltway, and let's move to the rural areas where you'll have a base or you'll have a federal facility, and that is employing the majority of people in that community. So you shut that down or you do some furloughs, and you're not only going to impact those federal workers, you're going to impact the entire community, because now they're not going out to lunch, they're not buying anything, they're really hunkering down because their pocketbooks have been much smaller, and that's going to impact an entire community. So when we think of the federal workforce, we always think of Washington, D.C., where you have other private sector people who can still go to the restaurants and go to the shops. But in these rural areas, that's it. That's what they depend on, and it's just getting lost in all this partisan debate.
what little traveling I've done this year, but I have done some, and this is the land of milk and honey here inside the Beltway. We are living very well compared to virtually everybody else because of this huge, constant, every 2 week government infusion of salary money.
Mm-hmm, right. And 85% of the federal workforce is outside Washington, D.C.
Take a break here and we'll return talking with Janet Copenhaver from Federally Employed Women. We'll be right back here on Federal News Radio.
Of your mobility initiative, a panel with experts from government and industry sponsored by Red River. And now, panelist Sanjay Sardar, CIO at FERC on mobility within smaller agencies.
Small agencies in general look at what is it that's going to save them money, because at the end of the day, we're under as much pressure, if not more, than the larger agencies. All these technologies, the cloud, the virtualization, the mobility, I think they all have to be related together. I think, but that cultural shift is already happening. And the consumerization of these products, everybody's now expecting that mobile technology is how people are going to interact with business.
What's your organization's mobility solution? As an authorized Cisco Gold partner, Red River can help you create a customized mobility kit with any kind of device, and they install any kind of software. Then wrap in complimentary 24/7 support, so you're on your way to working anywhere at any time. Learn more at redriver.com/mobility kit. IT decisions are black and white. Think red. Red River.
The year was 1957. The date was October 4th, and Americans woke up to a strange new reality. The first satellite launched into space wasn't ours. The Russians had gotten there first. Sputnik 1 may have been the size of a beach ball, but it was the space shot heard round the world.
Today, a new moon is in the sky.
And it galvanized the nation into action. The Martin Company rose to meet the challenge. Then, on St. Patrick's Day, 1958, a Martin-built Vanguard rocket roared into space with a shamrock taped to its side and put the world's first solar-powered satellite into orbit. 4 months later, the president signed the legislation that created NASA. The rest, as they say, is history. A history that is still being written by the scientists and engineers of Lockheed Martin. Their story is our story. See it unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100 years.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
Hi, I'm Tony Sterling, Vice President of Project Support Services Incorporated, a service-disabled veteran-owned small business. We provide project and contract support services to federal, state, and local government. I wear many hats in my job, as I'm sure most of you do, in small and mid-market companies. In 2008, we had only 46 employees. Now, thanks to Insperity's diverse spectrum of services, we have 156 employees and a true national footprint. One of the keys to our rapid growth is Insperity. They give us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on-time, on-budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General hosted payload program. That's spacedelivered.com.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there. Through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. I'm glad to have you with us. And remember, we're always on Wednesday at 10 a.m., and our shows are archived, so you can listen to them or pass them on to a friend at your convenience. My guest is Janet Copenhaver with Federally Employed Women, getting a different look at the what might happen if sequestration hits us. And Janet, we had a caller or a emailer rather who said, "What does sequestration mean?" And I know it's a legal term, and I probably, if you asked 10 people, you'd get 10 different versions of it. It's one of those things Congress sometimes does in order to saying slash and burn. They say we will sequester it. But the bottom line is they're talking about it would be across the board with some exceptions, would not touch the uniform military, but it would be across the board, the rest of the government, and it would cut force him to cut, is it 8%?
It's roughly 8.2%.
8.2%
across the board.
And that's across the board. I mean, do they have any choice? For instance, you know, there's the famous Washington Monument cut, you know, where if they cut the Interior Department's budget, then Interior, which is in charge of the National Park Service, shuts down the Washington Monument. Of course, the earthquake did that. But normally it's a very popular tourist attraction. Well, they shut it down when the kids come to D.C. for spring break. The kids' parents complain to their member of Congress. The congressman complains to Interior. Interior says, give us more money. And that's, mm-hmm. that's the cynical way a Washington Monument cuts. But we'd have this across the board, wouldn't we?
Yes, you would. And how they actually do that remains to be seen. I'm not sure how much latitude the White House is going to give each agency head, and that's kind of what we have just been waiting for, but I don't think we're going to see it. I think they're going to wait until the last minute in the hopes that there is an agreement before December 31st when the cuts would go into place at the beginning of the year 2013. So we really don't know how exactly they're going to put the cuts into place. Each agency is going to be cut, and hopefully they can be able to come up with their own ways. But still, an 8.2% cut across the board. Some agencies are very, very lean, and they can't absorb that.
Well, they're punishing them for being efficient, lean and efficient.
Exactly.
The ones who've given the money back and have trimmed personnel voluntary mm-hmm. or through attrition. You made an interesting comment during the break. You were talking about an across-the-board cut to an individual such as you, such as me, such as any of our listeners. It's one thing to cut your overall spending by the magic figure 8.2%, mm-hmm. but if you had to cut everything, you can't go to the bank that holds your mortgage and say, I'm going to pay you 8.2% less for the foreseeable future. Is that right?
Exactly. And you know, personally, I have a spreadsheet of all my household expenses. And when my son went off to college, I said, okay, I have to cut some stuff. But I couldn't just, like you said, just do 8.2 and cut my mortgage by that and cut my electric bill by that, because it was already as low as it could go. So that's not responsible budgeting, and it's really not responsible for Congress to be governing this way.
I had a simple but very good question from an agriculture employee who emailed it in to us today. He's out in the West, and he said, when will those of us in the provinces beyond the Beltway, when will we know whether sequestration is going to take effect or not? And I guess my answer, and I'm not trying to be flippant, is probably 1 second after we know,
mm-hmm.
because we don't have any crystal ball here or any pipeline to the truth.
Exactly. We will know a whole hell of a lot more after the election. And that, because there's two different scenarios. One, if Romney is elected president, they'll probably punt because the Republicans want to hit this package their own way. So if he's elected, they'll punt until after he gets into office and then really tackle the budget issue. If Obama is reelected, there's more chance that they will try and do a longer-term solution because he's going to be in for 4 years. They will be coming back for a lame duck, I think the week before Thanksgiving. And we'll know a lot then. If they're able to come up with an agreement, we'll know then. And then, you know, hopefully they'll be gone until the new 113th Congress starts.
Well, again, I'm totally confused about the whole issue of this and have been since it started. But the continuing resolution that they just approved, does that mitigate sequestration in any way, shape, or form?
No, not to my knowledge. It does fund the government through March. I think it's March 27th. But I believe that's at these levels, fiscal 2012 levels. But I believe sequestration will usurp that, and they'll still have to do those 8.2% reductions.
So if what you say, if Romney's elected, you think they'll punt? What would that mean?
They could do just a 3-month or 4-month let's say, delay in the sequestration cuts. So they won't have to deal with that until he is in power and coming up with his own budget answers.
Well, without being flippant or, I think, overly cynical, given the track record of Congress over the last 10 or 15 years under both parties' control, that would seem to be a very likely thing to happen if Romney is elected, mm-hmm. and maybe even if Obama is reelected, huh?
They could maybe punt then, too. I know they're talking. The leaders of the budget committees are talking, but I don't know how much they've done. And now they're gone, so they're gone till after Election Day.
Yeah. We were talking before the show about what would happen in government, what would happen to people if the government shut down. You gave the example of California where the DMV shut down for one day a week and the ripple effect that had on people who have to drive their cars in for emission testing or what have you. And they lost time, and the effect was that industry slowed down. Productivity mm-hmm. literally slowed down from anybody who had to deal with the DMV and presumably other California state government offices. What would be the impact? Can you walk through it? An average person like me, let's say I'm gonna be traveling for business or pleasure. How does it start off at the airport?
Well, the travel is going to be a mess because you're looking at some pretty major cuts. We're going to have to cut TSA. They're going to have to eliminate about 9,000 positions. So security lines obviously are going to take longer to get through. Then you're going to have to cut air traffic controllers. So that's going to decrease the number of flights taking off and landing, because obviously you can't take off and land without an air traffic controller. So some routes are going to be discontinued because they just don't, they can't put that many airplanes up there. You're also going to see increased prices because not only passenger travel, but cargo travel is going to go up. Again, you don't have the air traffic controllers. So you're not going to be flying as many cargo. Then you're going to have to lay off technicians. So more airplanes are going to be disabled and not able to fly because mechanically they're not ready, and you've laid off some technicians, mechanics. So right there, you haven't even taken off yet, and you're looking at major delays, major cost increases, and then just a pure safety, which that's what we keep stressing is, you know, you've got secure border security and immigration. You'd forget going internationally, flying internationally, because then you're going to have that. Even a delay in getting your passport, more expensive airplane tickets. So just in that little tiny sector alone of air travel, we're looking at major, major issues, major economic issues.
Do you think that the people in Congress who have set up this sequestration, do they not know about this, or do they know and don't believe it, or do they know and not care? It's a psychic question, but
yeah, I don't know what they're thinking. I can't imagine they don't realize this, especially when you talk about, like we were saying, the rural areas, how they represent these rural areas. They represent these, let's say, these defense military centers that employ the vast majority of their constituents. So maybe some of them think it's exaggerated and that's not really going to happen. But we have economists looking at this, and you know, we're not making this up. An 8.2% cut means some people are going to have to even be furloughed, but that means they're not on the job. So they're not performing the services. And that's really what our weekly series is all about. We're really trying to press the critical services that are provided to Americans each and every day in every sector of our lives that are going to be impacted.
Well, you talked about the TSA, slower processing of people getting on planes. Fewer air traffic controllers means fewer flights, mm-hmm. delays, cargo is stalled. And I guess this would apply, too, to Customs and Border Patrol.
Sure.
People coming in and goods being imported. Everything would back up. You got any other ideas about what it would do to the economy?
Well, you have the obvious ones, food safety. I know, you know, you think about Thanksgiving and how many tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of turkeys won't be inspected. So the safety of our food, our clean air, traffic, you know, your roads, keeping up with road repair. I know the transportation fund would be hit by several $100 million. You have that. So, and then you have our teachers. Our first weekly series was teachers are going to be, I have the number, a couple hundred thousand teachers would be laid off. Kids low income would lose not only food aid, but just, you know, low income help for families for that. That would be cut. We're just looking at every area of our sector would be adversely impacted.
Pretty grim. Janet, thank you so much for being with us, and we're going to have you back on this and as we get closer to Sequestration Day. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking with Stephen Losey and Sean Roddy from the Federal Times about sequestration, about the Postal Service, and health insurance premiums. Be right back here on Federal News Radio.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
This week's Experts in Health topic is childhood and adolescent immunizations, featuring Dr. Susan Macha, an infectious disease physician with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at Kaiser Permanente's new Gaithersburg Medical Center.
As a physician and mom, I know and appreciate the importance of childhood immunizations. They play an important role in protecting our children from dangerous and potentially life-threatening diseases. At Kaiser Permanente, we actively work with parents to ensure that our members are up to date on their immunizations. In fact, Kaiser Permanente Mid-Atlantic States has the highest immunization rates across 16 potentially life-threatening diseases, more than any other plan in the area. As a doctor and parent, I feel better knowing my kids are protected.
Dr. Macha was recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian magazine. Visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors. Childhood and adolescent immunization rate as reported in HEDIS 2011.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest and partner, Dave Zangrilli of Odin Feldman and Pittleman. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
Hey, Ravens fans, join your friends and fellow fans and paint the town purple this season.
Fires over the middle. It's intercepted. Ray Lewis with a pick.
Celebrate Purple Fridays every week by wearing your best purple jersey, shirt, or accessory to school, work, or play on Fridays. For happy hour, head to your favorite Bill Bateman's Bistro for appearances from the cheerleaders and Jim Beam drink specials. Find the schedule on BaltimoreRavens.com. Show your team spirit and get your purple on.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Statistics have always been important in baseball, but the Nats and other teams are now using sophisticated engineering to analyze the game even more. A technology called PitchFX, for example, uses multiple video cameras to follow the physics of the ball from the pitcher's hand through the crack of the bat. It's great for baseball enthusiast Alan Nathan, also a University of Illinois physics professor.
These cameras are recording every pitch in every game in Major League Baseball in 1/60th of a second intervals from when the ball is released to when it crosses home plate.
The system is engineered to instantly provide television viewers with graphics on pitch location and speed. And Nathan says coaches coaches can get details about the physical mechanics of player performance.
You end up with a distinct advantage for player development purposes, for scouting purposes.
Complementary systems are zeroing in on batters and even following motions on the entire field. More at nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey. We had a fascinating session with Janet Copenhaver from the Federal Employed Women, and she's having a webinar tomorrow night. And if you want more information on that, you can go to www.few.org and find out all about that. Now we're coming up with Sean Riley and Stephen Losey. Gents, you with us?
We're here. How are you?
Standing by. Good for you. I don't know if you heard talk with Janet about the sequestration. She had a very interesting take on it. And Sean, she complimented your story in Federal Times earlier this week about the furloughing situation.
Oh, thanks to her.
What's going on with the furloughs?
Well, it would be a tool. I mean, there's nothing formally going on from within most agencies, but it would be almost certainly a major tool for agencies to use in dealing with sequestration should it occur. The advantage would be that it, as opposed to a reduction in force, that it would give agency managers more flexibility in terms of cutting costs quickly without actually having to lay off employees that you're going to need later on. The prediction is, I think, from people both within and inside and outside of government, that you'd have tens of thousands of employees furloughed, at least for a short period of time.
Have you seen any numbers like one day a month or one day a week?
Well, the most detailed estimate I've seen comes from the Administrative Office of the United States Courts, which is, of course, the agency that runs the federal court system. Early this year, in January, they did some projections and concluded that probably about a little over 4,400 or about one-fifth of the workforce in the courts could face furloughs of up to 4 weeks. That's the most specific I've seen. Yesterday, the Defense Department Comptroller Robert Hale spoke and said that furloughs would likely be necessary at DOD as well, but he would not put a number on exactly how many employees could be furloughed, and I don't think he was even asked, how long the furloughs could last. Typically, I believe, though, they can go up to a total of 4 weeks, and then after that, you may have to go into some kind of RIF mode.
Well, 4 weeks, would that be 20 days, 20 work days, probably?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, and that's right. I think you have problems with people getting unemployment or a variety of things happening, and I could see what happens to flexible spending accounts and all of the things that are linked to people getting a steady salary.
Yeah, precisely. And there are lots of questions. OPM put out 28 pages of guidance on the impact of a furlough, and there would be some very complicated issues, I think, to deal with. The state and local governments in the last few years since the financial crisis hit have made extensive use of furloughs for the reasons I outlined earlier. But they've been fairly rare in the federal government, although you'll recall that last year about 4,000 FAA employees were furloughed for about 2 weeks after Congress failed to pass an extension of the FAA Reauthorization Act that was needed essentially to keep the agency in business. But there'd be a lot of decisions for managers about how to allocate these furloughs. It could be like one day every pay period. It could be for longer, depending on how much money they would need to save. And how quickly, but they'd also have to face difficult decisions about, who do I need, which mission is most important. For the article, I talked to the general counsel for the National Weather Service Employees Organization, by his calculation, for the Weather Service to take an 8.2% cut, which is what OMB is currently predicting, sequestration mean for a lot of domestic spending programs based on comparison with this year's budget, you'd have to furlough basically everybody for 4 weeks. And so that raises the question about how, assuming that's accurate, about whether the Weather Service could maintain 24-hour weather forecasting services throughout the country.
Kind of important in hurricane season particularly.
People in the Gulf Coast care a lot about that.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I'm thinking, too, as you're talking about the impact on morale, if they come through the radio station here and they say, we've got to cut costs, we've got to cut 8.2%, so, Mike, we're going to furlough you for one show. We're going to drop your show, and we'll keep Tom Timmon and Emily Kopp going in the morning because they're more important. So it could be a morale problem there.
Well, exactly. Those are the sort of questions that administrators will have to confront, and inevitably, and we saw the same, there are going to be some hurt feelings. We saw the same thing back during the concerns about a possible government shutdown last year when you have some agencies being designated as, quote-unquote essential and would remain on the job during a shutdown while others are considered, non-essential. And it's the same, even though there's no, those terms shouldn't carry any disparaging connotations. Inevitably, they do for at least some employees.
Well, and we have the same problem here when it snows in Washington. They used to say essential and non-essential, and that became politically incorrect.
Exactly.
So now they say emergency and non-emergency. But you still know who you are, and it's kind of a dubious honor if you have to come to work with that 33-inch snow we have. But.
Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, it is really, I guess in a backhanded way, it is kind of a recognition of your importance, or at least the importance of the job you're doing.
You know, I had forgotten about those 4,000 FAA employees that were furloughed last year. Were they made whole? Did they get that money back?
They were, in fact. And, it was interesting. The presumption was that some sort of act of Congress would be needed to make them whole, to reimburse them for the roughly 2 weeks they were out of work through no fault of their own. But then the Transportation Department lawyers, through some legal sleight of hand, decided that no congressional authorization was not needed. I forget the exact mechanism that they used. And DOT went ahead and made them whole without any kind of congressional approval, which probably would not have been forthcoming in any case.
Yeah, that's interesting. Every shutdown that I've been involved in, there aren't that many, but people were eventually made whole, and it turned out, had they known the duration of it and the way it was going, it would have been a great time to go to Ocean City. These were timed in the fall, no crowds, and you knew that eventually you'd get paid. But at the time, you never know that.
Well, exactly, and you never know also when you might be called back to work. And so, if you're down at Ocean City having a good time, you might not want to. You definitely want to stay in touch with your office to see if they need you the next day.
Yeah. Well, we asked Janet that. We got an email from an agriculture employee out beyond the Beltway. And he said, if sequestration happens, when will those of us outside the Beltway know about it? And my joking answer was maybe 1 second after we learn, because none of us know.
Yeah, this is really a conundrum for the Obama administration. The official guidance from OMB at this point, which came out in July, is for agencies to essentially continue normal spending and normal operations because Congress can still come up with a deal. But it was interesting when Mr. Hale, the DOD comptroller, spoke yesterday. He got a question from one Defense Department employee asking when are we going to start planning for this? And the answer was, we will. We're not going to do it right now. You're going to have increasingly concerned employees wanting to know exactly what is being done to prepare for this, because of course sequestration would take place would begin one quarter of the way through the fiscal year. So if agencies started early, say in the fall, to try and hold back money, not issue new contracts, have at least a limited hiring freeze, that could help them cushion the impact of sequestration later on. On the other hand, I think the administration wants to keep the sense of urgency on the fact that there would be, in its words, deeply destructive, quote-unquote, effects throughout the government if sequestration happened. And the more you plan for it, the more you take action to mitigate the effects, the less severe those impacts will be and the less the sense of urgency would be. So I think they want to keep the pressure on Congress to come to a deal in some kind of lame duck session that will occur after the elections. And if they start aggressively planning for it, remove some of that sense of urgency.
Well, Janet said she thought it was possible, particularly if in an Obama administration, I'm sorry, a Romney administration, that they would punt, that is, delay sequestration for a couple of months. You think that's a possibility?
Anything is possible. I mean, I've heard predictions that they would just simply cancel sequestration, that they throw up their hands and decide, that what Congress did last year with the Budget Control Act can now be undone. They could postpone it a few months to give themselves time. All we can go with at this point is that under current law, sequestration will begin January 2nd, but there's nothing to stop Congress. But, of course, it would need White House approval, and the White House so far has not said it's willing to give that approval.
What a good idea. Listen, on that note, we take a short break here. We'll be right back on Federal News Radio talking with Sean Riley and Stephen Losey from the Federal Times.
Attention all federal and military agencies. In March, the Australian Defense Force saved more than $150 million by using Intelsat General to put critical communications into space as a hosted payload on one of our satellites, on time and on budget. Our next hosted payload satellite launches in 2013. So if your agency needs on time, on budget access to space, take an example from our allies down under and look no further than Intelsat General. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General hosted payload program. That's spacedelivered.com.
The numbers mount, and so does the need of the more than 45,000 men and women of the U.S. Armed Forces wounded in action overseas. They are coming home, and you can help their transition by joining the GTSI Charity 5K Run Walk in Herndon, Virginia on October 13th. It benefits the Wounded Warrior Project, which provides direct programs for our injured veterans. For race information or to register online, visit GTSICharity5K.com. Or visit them on Facebook at GTSI Corp.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
This is John Gilroy from Armature and host of Federal Tech Talk. After almost 300 interviews, I've had many guests who talk about cutting-edge technology and agile software development. How would you like to be part of a fast-paced team with an agile approach to projects? We need talent. We seek experts in .NET, WCF, jQuery, and HTML5. Take advantage of this opportunity where you can make a difference. For more information, go to armaturecorp.com or send your resume to radiojobs@armaturecorp.com.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
Hi, I'm Tony Sterling, Vice President of Project Support Services Incorporated, a service-disabled veteran-owned small business. We provide project and contract support services to federal, state, and local government. I wear many hats in my job, as I'm sure most of you do, in small and mid-market companies. In 2008, we had only 46 employees. Now, thanks to Insperity's diverse spectrum of services, we have 156 employees and a true national footprint. One of the keys to our rapid growth is Insperity. They give us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Join senior government leaders from HHS, CMS, DOD, and VA at FCA Bethesda's 5th Health IT Day on October 18th at the Bethesda North Marriott. Program sessions will discuss electronic health records, shared services, big data mobility, and more. Register today at fcabethesda.org/healthitday. FCA Bethesda thanks its sponsors, Accenture, DRC, General Dynamics, ICF International, Intel, Lockheed Martin, Microsoft, Northrop Grumman, and SAS.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. And I'm talking with Sean Riley and Stephen Losey of the Federal Times. Steve, as you well know and I know, one of the most passionate subjects you can deal with federal workers is health insurance.
That's right. And last week was the big day for health insurance. The Office of Personnel Management unveiled the premium rates for next year. And the big headline was the premium rates overall are going up 3.4% next year. That's pretty good considering what they've been in recent years. Some years they've been, you know, 7+%. Last year they were 3.8%. So 3.4 is pretty good, although it's not as good as the 2.1% increase in 2008.
Right, but given medical inflation, which always runs way ahead of the regular economy, I would have thought that federal workers would be very happy with this, and I guess their average increase is 3.7, but as several of them pointed out to me, the average depth of the Mississippi River is 6 feet, but you better not try to walk across it.
That's right. You know, when you look at FEHBP versus other healthcare plans across the country, a 3.4% increase is pretty good. You know, PricewaterhouseCoopers in May, they estimated the premiums nationwide are going to go up 5.5% next year. And, you know, when you look at some of the most popular plans, things look even better. You know, the most widely used plan in FEHBP is the Blue Cross Standard plan. And for the standard itself, the premiums are only going up 33 cents per pay period. That's 0.4%. For the family, it's going up $1.66. That's 0.8%. So if you're in Blue Cross Standard and you like that this year, you might want to just hang tight there, because it seems to be the best deal going into next year.
You know, it's funny, we do this series of shows on the health plans, and I write about it, and you guys write about it for the entire length of the open season. And at the end of the day, we discover that 6% of the population has changed health plans, meaning most people stay put no matter what.
Yeah, that's right. Inertia is a pretty big factor going into how people decide what they're going to do on their health insurance.
I was surprised at the comments we got on the story. You know, I thought we did it pretty straight. Said it's an overall average increase of 3.4. I believe it's for the employees, it's actually 3.7.
That's right, yeah.
But even so, as you said, everyone was predicting that premiums are going to go up 6% on average in the private sector for 2013. So you'd think that was good, but it was interesting in the comments how many people pointed out, yes, but we've haven't had a pay raise in 2 years. They're going to freeze us again in 2013. And the least they could have done was to hold health premiums at a zero increase. But that's not possible, is it?
Well, I suppose it's possible that OPM could, the government could decide to take on the entire share of the premium increase on their own. But it's possible, but it's not realistic, to be honest. The American Federation of Government Employees was one of the organizations that was calling for a freeze in healthcare premiums, as you said. And let me just back up a bit. I suppose, it's impossible to ask for premiums to stay flat overall, because there are market factors that go into it. You know, the healthcare costs inevitably go up in the private sector. There are more people using more healthcare. So yeah, it's inevitable that premiums are going to go up, although the American Federation of Government Employees was hoping for such a freeze in the next year.
Well, a lot of times people don't want you to show up the brighter side of this, but one thing I think it's important, particularly if you've ever had to buy insurance on your own, is the fact that the government pays the same percentage year after year after year. I mean, even if premiums go up, the government continues to pay whatever it is, 70-something percent, 70 to 72% for white-collar workers, and an even larger share of Postal Service employee premiums. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe the government is paying about 72% of the cost in the next year. So, yeah, they are taking on the bulk of the cost there.
Well, I changed jobs many moons ago and lost health insurance from my company, and they said I could continue it. I could cobra it. You know, I thought a cobra was a snake in a basket in India, but it is also continuation of benefits. And they said, yeah, I could continue, but I would have to pay 100% of the premium plus a fee, service fee for handling it. So my health insurance went up something like 60%. 62% overnight because of this. So that government share is not to be sneezed at.
That's right. That's right. But, you know, it should be noted that people are correct. Pay has been frozen for the last 2 years. It's going to stay frozen until at least March 27th, I believe. The Congress just passed the six-month continuing resolution. Obama hasn't signed it, but he's, you know, almost certain to do that sometime this week. So, yeah, pay is frozen. Pay is not going up anytime soon, pay scales, that is. And so people in the federal workforce, their pocketbooks are going to be squeezed just a little bit more thanks to the health care premium increases.
Well, if money is really tight, and I did not bring my chart in here, my new premium chart, but aren't there a couple of plans that are actually cutting premiums?
Yeah, there are a handful. The National Association of Letter Carriers Health Benefit Plan is going down about half a percentage point for family. The, Mail Handlers Benefit Plan, the Standard Self Plan for postal employees, that's going down almost half a percentage point. Blue Cross Standard Self for postal employees is going down 0.4%. And overall, the vision premiums are also going down, I believe, a little bit less than a percentage point next year. So if you want to shop for some deals, they're out there. There are some plans that are bringing down their prices. OPM's done a pretty good job, some of the experts say, at encouraging healthcare plans to use to get their people to use their enrollees to use more generic prescription drugs, and since prescription drugs are about 30% of the overall FEHBP cost, that's nothing to sneeze at. So OPM has been pushing healthcare plans to improve their cost efficiency, and at least in a couple of plans, it seems to be paying off.
Well, OPM Director John Barry spoke to the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Convention in Reno this year. I was there, and a wonderful time, by the way. But he told them at the time that they hope to keep the premium increase to a minimum and lower than last year. And I took that as a pretty good sign that they had saw the light at the end of the tunnel, and it was looking pretty good.
Yeah, and it looks like John Barry was able to fulfill that promise.
Okay. What about is this going to boomerang in 2013? Is there likely that there might be a big premium jump, because we've had some good years here, and I noticed that every fourth year, every year divisible by four, the premium increases are modest.
It's possible. It's really hard to predict what the healthcare market is going to do a year from now. So I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. I think one thing that is interesting, I believe in 2014, a lot of the healthcare reform provisions, also known as Obamacare, go into effect. So throughout 2013, it's going to be interesting to see what the market does to prepare for that.
Doesn't that change flexible spending accounts?
Yes, it does lower the maximum that you will be able to save in flexible spending accounts, for all people, including federal employees. Used to be you could save as much as $5,000. They are lowering that to $2,500.
So that's going to be a hit for somebody. Listen, Steve and Sean, thank you very much for being with us. Remember, our shows are archived here. You can listen anytime, and we'll see you here next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a good week.
Thanks, Steve.